Welcome to the V-Wave Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by River Runners for Wilderness and is created by a cast of river lovers who understand the river resource comes first. On the shoulders of a healthy river, do we recreate ourselves? What comes second is river access, a very thorny V-Wave, all in itself. The V-Wave discusses these things and river ecology, recent river trips, river history, river management, and new changes on rivers. Have a topic you'd like to hear more about or help discuss? Get in touch with me, your host, Tom Martin, at rrfw.org. That's T-O-M-M-A-R-T-I-N at rrfw.org. Special thanks to Char and Trev, who came up with this idea. Welcome to today's V-Wave podcast. Today we're going to talk about Grand Canyon flash floods with Larkin Carey and Lonnie Gordon. And before I introduce Larkin and Lonnie, I'd like to go through some of the flash floods that I remember from my boating career, and I certainly remember from the history of river running in Grand Canyon as well. And I'm going to start from Lee's Ferry and head out toward Lake Mead as a normal river trip would. Those of you may remember August of 2015, when huge boulders were washed onto Highway 89A. And that same flood rearranged the deck chairs in Soap Creek Rapid. At the ferry, or the road going to the ferry, September of 2013 rearranged all of that stuff. And then, of course, Tadahatso Camp, there was a fatality in July of 2021. An intense rainstorm went over a very small micro drainage and poured a lot of rocks down that drainage and onto that camp. The Little Colorado River has a long history of flooding. Of course, September 1923, at 119,000 cubic feet a second, pushed the USGS Trip, camped at the top of Lava Falls, up into the sawgrass. And they sat there for a number of days until the water went back down again. But the Little Colorado River, back in, remember, March of 2023, had quite the little flood. Hance Rapid, of course, August 2012, remember, stopped our left run of Hance, where we used to go left around the Muffin Rock, and that's all. That's gone now. Crystal Rapid, of course, everybody remembers December of 1966 at 30,000 cubic feet a second. It's kind of hard to imagine just going on through Grand Canyon on 30,000 cubic feet a second, but imagine going down the Crystal drainage. Rearrange that rapid, the deck chairs there. Dubendorf Rapid, well, that's what Larkin and Lonnie are going to talk with us about tonight from August of 2024. Then, of course, Havasu Creek, fatality there in August last year with a 7,000 CFS flood. But I remember the 1990 flood at 20,000 CFS that really rearranged all the big trees, blew them out, blew out the travertine dams. Lava Falls, March of 1995 was the last big flood there. Rearranged the deck chairs there in that rapid with a 17,000 cubic feet a second flood. Diamond Creek, of course, we used the road to get egress there to the river, and that flashes pretty much every year. The Wallapai do a great job of trying to keep that road open, but occasionally it's closed for a couple days. And June of this year, already that happened for a day. So with that in mind, I'd like to introduce Larkin Carey and Lonnie Gordon. Thank you so much for visiting with me today. You launch in Grand Canyon tomorrow, so you got to be pretty excited. Welcome to the V-Wave podcast.
Oh, thanks, Tom. Yeah, hey. We're so excited.
Super excited to be here and to be going down the Grand.
Yeah. But I'm so thrilled that you're here because you saw the Dubendorf flash flood. Please tell me about that.
Yeah, it's pretty special that we got that moment there and in a safe way. Flashes don't take that long. They can be pretty fast, so it's a unique experience to be able to be there for it. We were coming down from bedrock, And we were kind of celebrating because we had just had a nice run at Bedrock and have had some previous challenges and emotional trauma going left at Bedrock. And so we were feeling like our adventure for the day was done, and we were happy to be, Dubendorf is not that challenging of a rapid usually. And so we were feeling pretty good about it. And we started down, it's a short paddle from Bedrock down to Dubendorf. And this squall came in, and all of a sudden we couldn't see the other side of the river, and the wind picked up and we were no longer making downstream progress. And so we eddied out, and it happened to be right at the scout, which was quite fortunate. So we pulled over, and we were in a group of 16, a normal large trip. And so we were able to get everyone pulled over right there. And we hung out for a few minutes and made sure we were in a safe place. We were seeing rivulets come down all over the canyon, so it was just a downpour. But we were all safe, and it didn't seem like the rain was going to let up. And so we decided to go down and give it a scout. Why not? So we walked down the whole group. We tied off to some tamarisks and walked the whole group down. And sat there and watched Dubendorf, and it looked like pretty normal, just maybe a little more water, but it seemed like looks like it hasn't really changed. We all felt pretty good about it, and we watched the rain start to dissipate as those storms do. It rained hard, and then the sun came out, and it was starting to feel pretty good, and so we all just relooked, and the line looked as we expected. We all agreed, and we were all going to go right at that point. It looked like a real nice, easy kind of sneak at that level. And we were feeling like we didn't want any more adventure that day after Bedrock. And so we started walking back to our boats. And that's when it started to get kind of wild. We started to hear this sound that I have a hard time even describing. It was like we felt the earth just rumble. And it was like a feeling more than a sound. So we were all confused. What is happening right now? And we're looking around to see, like, is the side of the canyon coming down on us? Is there a wall of water coming down the river? What is going on? And then one, and then two, and then all of us pointed across at Stone Creek. Galloway Creek?
Yeah. Yes, it's
yeah.
Galloway.
Yeah, Galloway. And it just started to pick up. So it went from whatever its normal flow is to thousands of CFS. It was wild.
It's normally dry. If you hike up the drainage, you might find little seeps here and there, but
normally in the summer, it's dry. We camped in it. Mm-hmm. We laid over there in 2020, and we set our tents up in that wash because it was a great spot. And so, yeah, this just turned into a churning rush explosion, I would even call it. Trunks of trees that are far bigger than grow down at the canyon, so they obviously came from way high up coming out, and boulders and just everything pouring out of that, and it started to dam the river. It was wild. It just came all the way across to about halfway across the river, and created this big lake behind it. So our boats were no longer in moving water. There were debris and branches and trees that were floating down the river, and were in this huge eddy that was backed up behind Dubendorf. And we all lost it. I mean, we all went crazy in our different ways. Some of us trying to survive whatever apocalypse we were just experiencing. Some of us very excited, woohoos, and some of us just not really, just frozen up dealing with it how we deal with it. So it was really interesting. Anything to add to that?
Yeah, part of it? Just wide eyes, jaw dropped, you know, those moments that happen in life when you look around with people and you realize, oh, this is one of those moments we will all remember to the grave. Yeah, just a really powerful and beautiful experience to go through together. Yeah.
Lanny, would you mind to try to describe to me that sound that Larkin was talking about?
Yeah, it's something I've never heard before in my life, but I would say it had some combination of loud thunder cracking with deep roaring, like grumbly tummy of the earth digestion problems kind of sound. It was, yeah, full encompassing. And it felt like, you know, if I couldn't hear, I would be able to deeply feel it as well.
Yes.
Yeah, it yes. shook the body. So
Hazel and I reminds me of a time we were camped at John's Canyon, and it was the middle of the night. It had been lightly raining all day. This is on the San Juan River. And we heard that sound I had never heard before. I described it as 747 engines at full fuel tied to flat cars on a train slowly rumbling by our tent.
Yeah.
It's powerful. It's alarming. And you said it very well. Even if you were deaf, you would know something big was happening. Mm. And we don't get a chance to experience that very often. So it is alarming, and you know it. And Larkin, I wanted to mention something that you had mentioned about this side canyon flash flood is starting to dam the river. And you can see that at Shinumu, where we all stop on River Right and go up to the waterfall and play in the waterfall. If you look on River Left, you will see rounded large boulders on the left shore. You will see that at Tanner. You will see that at Hans. It's why all that rapid, because these side canyons can make river-wide dams. So you're seeing something which is really fascinating. And if it's big enough, you're going to have to be ready to retreat and get your boats and work your way up the vegetation line as the dam builds up. So I just wanted to mention that because these are very good observations that you guys had. So then what happened? You're watching this thing spewing out of the river.
Yeah, I think in that moment we didn't know what was going to come next, kind of as you said. Like, there was I don't think we even thought we would be running the rapid soon after that. But then here comes USGS.
Okay.
And we were waving at them. The flash had mostly stopped by the time they were coming down.
Okay.
And so we were waving at them like, hey, it flashed. And they were like, hey, how's it going? Nice to see you guys again. And just went for it.
Okay.
And went right into a big new hole that had developed on the right side of the river, which there's some great pictures of now. And that was almost as fun as watching the whole thing flash. And that gave us more confidence of, oh, they just did it. But they were in one of those big boats, too.
Two big motor rigs. A hard shell Zodiac. And
yeah.
One of the motor rigs came fairly close to flipping.
Mm-hmm.
And Zodiac, I don't know how they didn't flip.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we were like, well, maybe we won't do it that way. But what else could we do? They gave us a little courage, I guess.
We had been leapfrogging with them since put in. The Pariah had flashed on our launch night, and so we had gotten a notification to the InReach that the Pariah was flashing, and we're like, wait a minute, this is just right over there. Let's go take a look. And we walked over. It was something like 1 in the morning, and the USGS was there with their big lights and doing sediment measurements and just examining the flash. And that was at launch, and that's when we realized this is going to be a different trip. This is going to be a really heads-up trip, and we need to be paying attention to all the storms. And so we leapfrogged with USGS the whole way down, and we were happy to see them and a little worried that they just jumped right into it, but very happy to see that they made it out fine. And I've shared the photos with them, and they were excited to see those as well. It was a neat experience, but that made all of the boatmen... We stopped and reevaluated and completely revamped our line, relooked at the rapid and redecided on a completely different line that wasn't the one the USGS team took and wasn't the one we were going to take and probably isn't the one you would take now. We were in a unique nexus of time where it was a different rapid and it hadn't settled yet. And so we had to make sure that it was settled enough for us to be able to make our safe line. And it was. But it's probably a different rapid this time, which I'm excited to see in a week or so.
You know, you're exactly right. All this rock goes into the river and it's not settled. So you read what you see and know that later, well, that's going to be different for somebody else. And so that's why we all scout, right? You tell me the run you made months later, I come along and I try to do what you did months earlier. It might not be the best thing to do based on river flow, based on another flash flood that might have happened somewhere else and moved a lot of water through there and rearranged those deck chairs. So that's a really good observation, good thing to know. Can you tell me about your boats? What size boats you had?
This was our favorite is to rent boats. Mm-hmm. Just so much easier for coming down here. So this was from Saba. These are 18 foots. We did have one 14 foot personal craft. It was a wing that was brought out from California. Really nice setup. And they did. Everyone did great. We had no flips.
And a kayaker and a ducky.
Yeah, we had two safety kayakers and
two kayakers.
Yeah.
Great.
So it was a good team.
So what was your run? What did you look at? What did you see and what did you run?
So I used to teach swiftwater rescue in the Front Range of Colorado to firefighters, and I love just sitting in front of a rapid and watching debris come down, just getting a sense of how the rapid, what it is, and diving into it in that way. This one was evolving, and so I couldn't really get a lock on what this was as a stable rapid. And so we all decided that the run would work, and the run in this case was we entered just to the left of the tongue, and we stayed there most of the way through, and then we made a hard pull back right. So there was a big hole that we needed to avoid that we'll see if it's still there now in a few weeks, but it was kind of central, and we needed to avoid that. And then the left run was getting a lot of water pushed over from the right side because of that dam, and so it looked pretty rugged, so we didn't want to really stay very far left. So we wanted to be as central as possible, miss that hole, and then move back right.
Cool.
And I think that's the run everyone did. Except the kayaker. I think they stayed more left, but he can run everything, so he did great. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So where did you go to camp?
So our day ended up not being over. We went and we went up to Deer Creek and had a whole nother rainstorm that we got to watch waterfalls come off across from Deer Creek. We were considering camping there, but we saw the drainage that pours off onto that. So we decided not to camp across from Deer Creek, but we did the hike up and saw an amazing show of waterfalls come down across from that. It was really spectacular, one of the most beautiful times I've had at Deer Creek. And then we went down to football field and had a really nice day down there. So that was our... Oh, there was one more small adventure that we had in between, and this was at Tapetes Creek. When we got to Tapetes, which is right after Dubendorf, there was a whole group there that had been stranded. They were making the hike up to Tapetes Creek, and so we stopped and made sure they were all okay, and they were just separated from their boats, so they were waiting for the water to come back down enough that they could get back across to their boats. So it affected that whole local area.
Okay, so these people were doing a Thunder River hike, and their boats were on the downstream side of Tapetes Creek, and they were on the upstream side, or vice versa?
It was a commercial crew, and the guides and the boats were on the upstream side, and okay. They had some hikers that I think had crossed the creek at some point, and then the creek level came up, and so the hikers were down on the downstream side. And so our safety kayaker stopped and made sure everybody was okay, and all was good, and so we moved on. But they never came by us that evening, so they must have just figured out a camp there.
Camped at Allies, or they could have camped it just below Tapetes, because if their boats were above, they can run the rapid and pull in below, then pick up their people who are below. So that's all good.
Yeah.
And they just don't have to deal with the cross, but they need to know that and communicate that.
Yeah.
Wow, exciting. You're very lucky. I mean, to see that. It's not a lot of people who get to see that. One of the things I was thinking about is, do you remember the date in August?
It was the 22nd. I looked it up before we ran this, before we came down here.
Okay.
To launch again. So 22nd of August, probably early afternoon, 1 p.m.-ish.
So our monsoon typically starts, people say, on the 4th of July. But it can be in June. It can be later into July. But one of the things I've noticed here with these is, as the monsoon season progresses, the soils become saturated. So end of August, it's a good time to see these types of events because the soil is saturated from earlier storms that have blown through and kind of set things up to be a little slippery, a little loose, and then, boom, there's a big event that moves everything. And so that's a common event. It doesn't mean that you won't see if an intense storm just shows up and it's been dry for a long time, that intense storm can get things to energize and go. But it doesn't have to be that intense to get things to energize if it's been prepped or primed, which you guys had.
One of the things we've been seeing in Front Range, Colorado, that also has gotten a lot of big fires recently is the fires make the drainages and the whole watershed more susceptible to flooding.
That's right.
And so it might be something with the Bravo fire burning now, we may need to be watchful of that later this year and for the next few years.
That's a really good point, Larkin. Maybe now would be a good time to talk about what you should think about on your river trip if you're boating. I was going to say in the monsoon season, but I think I'll change that sentence to say if you're boating in the Grand Canyon, which is a 365-day-a-year adventure.
Great. So I'll tell a little bit of some of what I do prepping for a trip in the Grand Canyon, and feel free to add in. We work together on this, Lonnie, and then feel free to add in if I'm missing something or you have ideas with that. But usually a couple weeks out, I start checking flows regularly, both on the main flow of the river and the main tributaries. And that gives me a sense of if flashes have happened recently, how much rain has been coming down in the area. On the comfort side, it also gives a sense of, is the river going to be filthy dirty and hard to filter out of, or is it going to be clean? So that's a positive there. I also subscribe to the National Park USGS Coconino County River Alerts, and so that goes to text message or InReach. It's nice when I'm at home to have it on text message so I can keep track of the flashes that are happening in the national park earlier in the year. This was something they were trial running last summer in 2024 and is fully operational now in 2025. The key thing is that it also goes to the InReach, so this is helpful. And they're also dialing in the location, so usually get a location, a river mile, and an amount of rain that has already fallen or is expected to fall. And it's very useful. It's definitely not the only tool you need for something like that, but it is helpful along with everything else. Flash floods are, as we've talked about a little bit, they can come from far away. The drainages can be a few miles to hundreds of miles. And so it might not be the storm that you're seeing over you that is actually affecting the drainage. One of the things that we saw in Dubendorf, we were lucky to see that happen, but it happened so fast. We were about to go back and make our run, and then a few minutes later, it had rearranged the rapid. This is something that could happen way ahead, and you could just come upon a rapid that has been rearranged. Or it could happen while you're there or overnight, or it just happens way quicker than I was aware of until actually experiencing it. One of the other key things is having has been called a rim run, someone to forecast and keep track of the larger weather patterns and communicate when those change or if something significant happens. A few years ago, we were down there during the high flow event where it went from 15,000 to 45,000. And it was so handy to have a RIMREN who could let us know that that was actually happening, because it wasn't clear what day that was actually going to happen. And that was absolutely essential in that case. And then both last year for the Dubendorf flood and this year we're launching tomorrow, I have a good friend of mine who's also keeping track of that and can help keep track of the monsoon season and how the overall weather patterns are going. So I highly suggest having someone at home that has been down the Grand and understands weather and desert weather particularly to help out with communicating with that. Anything else to add?
I think you've covered a lot of it. I mean, there's the just keep your nose out when you're in the moment, because there's a lot of things that with all that preparation, anything can still happen. So I think as wonderful as the Grand is to getting us out of the busy world, especially in the summer when you only have 16 days to get to Diamond, it can still feel really fast and you can feel rushed. And so I think we were lucky that a lot of us took a deep breath right after going through Bedrock and slowed down in that moment and kind of observed our situation. So yeah, taking those moments before doing anything that has a little added risk to just say, is anything abnormal right now? What does everything feel like? Where's my gut on this situation? I think is something that's really strong, and that luckily in the Grand Canyon, I think we get to train those muscles better because we don't have the stimulation of the world, which is one of the things I love about it. Yeah.
Nice. You know, when I think about monsoon season, I think about no place safe. For me, what I really want to remember, what I must remember, is to go high. I have seconds to go high. Looking at the fatalities that have happened, people are trying to cross creeks. No, just drop it, go up. You don't have much time. So anybody who was up in Galloway when that event happened, they would have been wet, they might have been hanging out, they would have had a brief sound warning. What the heck is that? Go, get up, move. And it's hard to learn that. We bring a lot of skills with us that we've repeated and we've learned and we've learned. Go up's fast. It's you got to do it. And so that's a team talk sort of thing you talk about, saying, hey, it's monsoon season or it's not monsoon season. You hear that weird funky noise. Get up, go. Just start climbing. And we'll sort it out later. You might be there for a night. We'll sort it out when the water goes back down, but you're still alive. That's the first thing to think about. The other thing I think about is, you guys were in a pretty safe place. The canyon is pretty open there. You could have had some rock fall in the red wall behind you. Chances are it would have parked out up on the sort of Tonto shelf up above. That you've got a little bit of that there. But there's really no place safe. We're looking at an event happening on River Wright. And you mentioned, you'd look back behind you, hey, we look kind of open and we're kind of safe here. In the Muav Gorge from basically Deer Creek or Kanab all the way down to lava or a little above lava, that's a hard place to be in when the monsoon comes through. There are a few places like Last Chance above Havasu, the ledges down below Havasu. There's a couple places where you can actually get in small little caves, little overhangs, and be dry. Dick Griffith did that with his wife and Johnny Schlump and Isabel, his wife Isabel, just below Mat Cat. On the left, there's a big slab there, and it's dry in there. They pulled in their two little boats and sat there just a little ways above Upset in 1951. So we as a species have been out there boating for a long time looking for shelter. That's a pretty good place they were in. I went over and looked at it. It's amazing that you can put down places to sleep, and there's driftwood in there for a firewood. And then they had a little fire going. But if the river had come up, and Dick Griffiths was worried about that, if the river comes up, we're going to be flooded out of here. And it might happen in the middle of the night. So this is also situational awareness. It has happened in the past that flash floods have made dams in the river. And if you're above that, you need to be with your boats and you need to be working your boats up in the vegetation as the water rises. And then you need to be working your boats down with the water level as the water drops. And that can be an all-night adventure. So you set up teams, and so people can sleep while people are awake, just hanging out, talking at the boats, paying attention to things. We had to do that at Fern Glen when the LCR cranked out back in the early 90s. And a science trip went by, and they said, LCR is flooding. Have a good trip. And it had been raining for days. And we were like, oh, I think they mentioned something like 60, 70,000 CFS. And we went, oh. Of course, that never happened, but the water came up. Well, the water comes up at Fern Glen in the afternoon, evening anyway, from the dam. So, but the LCR was there, and so we watched it. It came about 30,000 or so, and it was pretty cool. There was lots of stuff floating in the water, telephone poles, all kinds of junk. On the next day, we had a good time running out. It was fine in lava, and you know, it was high water lava. It was great. So it's that situation awareness. No place safe. The middle of the river can be the safest place, but not necessarily when cannonballs are coming down off of the high cliffs above you. So you're like, okay, well, I'm going to go to a cliff, and I'm going to plaster myself against the cliff. Well, if you can find it under an overhang, you're going to be good. You're going to have some safety there. But if you can't, the stuff's going to be raining down the cliff sides, and you don't have a lot of time. Do the best you can with the best judgment you have in the situation, but sometimes the stars align against you, and that's just what it is. Also want to mention that oftentimes these things happen in the afternoon and the evening, especially if they're storm-driven. The storm can usually get kicking and cruising by noon and thereafter, and you had a very good point that you can't see what's going on above you. And this is George Mancuso in Big Canyon, is it? Arm of the Little Colorado River. He and his partner were blown out of there. They couldn't climb high. They had no place to go. They didn't even know it was sunny. It was sunny where they were, but the rain was happening up on the road up, 89 there, heading up to Tuba City and points north, Page and whatnot. So sometimes it's just the sound that we hear when these things are happening.
A couple of things to jump in on with that too. Choosing which adventures that you do, if you know you're in monsoon season, we definitely went right by a few canyons knowing that these are classic canyons that people would love to go and have a little hike up, and it just wasn't a trip for that. Wouldn't have been safe on those days. And so making decisions like that for the safety of the group. And then I mentioned the high flow event, and that was so cool to be a part of that. We were at 220, which has tons of space. Upper 220, it's just beach all the way up. And as you were talking about moving the boats up and back down, that's what we had to do. We moved our whole kitchen three times throughout the night and had to move the boats all the way up. And well, it stayed up on that instance, so we rode it out. But it was an all night getting up, and we were thinking it was going to be getting up every couple hours, but it was fast. It was like we're moving the boats every 30 minutes for a while. And so those dams that you're talking about in this with the Dubendorf, it only was maybe 3-4 feet, so it wasn't a huge dam. It was a lot of water back there, but we only had to move the boats once. But with the high flow event, or like the Little Colorado you're talking about, it could go up 10 plus feet, and yeah, and a lot more if you're in a narrow part of the canyon. Definitely an interesting and powerful experience to see nature untied down by the dams and everything else with the high flow event. That was just a taste of what it must have used to be like.
Well, it's also a taste of what it can be, because the dam is going to stop big events from surprising us from above the dam. The dam itself can surprise us if they decide, oh, we're running 7 now, but we have some sort of electrical event. Let's crank it up to 25. And they will do that. So the dam can be a starter. And then the Paria goes all the way up to Bryce Canyon. That's a big drainage. So once you pass the Paria, there's all kinds of drainage. This can start really making your day interesting. And then you pick up the Little Colorado River. And then that's 119,000 CFS in 1923. It's situational awareness. This alert system is really good. And it pings in and I put that out for RIMRENs. And, you know, I'm not even on the river. But when I am on the river, I've got that. I want my RIMREN to have it. That's a helpful tool. But your discussion about situational awareness is really most important. I typically check my inReach on the river after dinner. And by then, that alert's already gone off for a 2 p.m. event, which I knew about or I didn't know about. So it's helpful, but you're exactly right. And that's why we're having this discussion today for this podcast, is just to help people understand. Oh, it's just something else to think about, is can the river rise unexpectedly through an event that's happening upstream of me where I am or downstream of me? Or far away from me, upstream of me, where I am, or downstream of me? And what are the clues I have that something's happening? Can I see the storm? Wow, yeah, waterfalls everywhere. How cool is that? Can I hear the thing? Yeah. So those are tools. They're in our toolbox. They're pretty rusty because they're in the bottom of the box. You don't use them that often. But there they are, and we need to remember that they're there, especially now. It's monsoon season, and you guys saw it. So you remember that tool.
Yeah, it's ingrained now, for sure. And I think incorporating that into the environments that you're in has been something that I've really enjoyed, not in a worry way necessarily, but like, oh, when was the last time I saw something I could hike up in this narrow canyon? And just noticing that as we go.
We spend a lot of time in canyons in Utah. Mm-hmm. And usually dry, hopefully dry, in our case. But yeah, that's something that has become a very current practice of weather check, but also just what are our exits? Mm-hmm. How do we get out of here when mm-hmm. things get bad?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that exit leads you to something really cool that you could just walk up and explore. So you can make it a fun activity, too, to look for.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It reminds me, again, of the San Juan, of Johns Canyon. And then also, just recently, was it last year, they were camped at, what's the name of the canyon, not too far up from Mexican Hat on River Wright. I'm spacing on it right now, but that blew out and blew their boats into the water and off to Lake Powell.
Yeah.
So be careful where you camp. And I've camped in the gravel there in Galloway as well, because it's pretty bony and there's rocks everywhere and brush everywhere in that nice Galloway camp.
Yeah.
Kind of long, thin, sort of shotgun of a camp. But then you go to the drainage and, wow, there's a nice flat place up there. Typically, it's winter when we do that. It hasn't rained for a long time. And so we're pretty comfortable with that. And it's a nice starry night. And we're like, oh, you're going to take the risk. But I remember it was pitch dark. It was raining. We heard the jets on the flat cars at full blast, and I was like, we're going to die. We're going to be crushed here. Got out of the tent, couldn't see a thing, mist in front of our little headlamps. I couldn't see my hand fully outstretched in front of me. Hazel's on the ground, hands and knees, going toward where she knows there's a drop into the canyon. She gets to the drop. She reaches down as far as she can to see if her hand is wet, and it's not. She says, okay, so we have a little bit of freeboard here. And we crawl back to our tent and we huddle there all night long until first light while we're out there watching that thing is still going. So these big drainages, you know, they will be like that. Fortunately, the actuary tables for fatalities in these types of events are way better than driving the car that you guys were in today to come to Flagstaff to go on your river trip tomorrow. I don't know if that's helpful or not.
No, I think it's nice to wrap it back around, because this is maybe a little bit of a scary podcast for some people, but absolutely, rivers are incredible. The Grand Canyon is our favorite place on the planet. We come back here any chance we can, and by far it is a safe place. And these are a few of the things to think about, but it absolutely will make you feel more alive than anywhere else in the world, and more in love and more connected to nature. And it is worth coming to at any season you can. Just get the tools together that you need for that trip and try and make it as safe as you can, and you're going to be totally great. We had, the scary part was a few moments. The just awe of nature part has continued. We're still in it. That was an absolutely astounding, incredible experience to watch that flash. And I hope you all get to see something like that in nature in a safe way. Totally incredible.
Yeah, one of the best days of our lives.
Lovely. Anything else you want to add to this as we kind of wrap this up?
I think we hit all the important things for that discussion. I think we could keep talking about the canyon for hours.
Yes.
How much we all love it and all our favorite experiences. But I think we hammered the flash foot side pretty good. Are you thinking anything else?
I'm pretty good with it. Yeah, no, I think we did. Larkin Carey and Lanny Gordon, thank you both very much for taking the time out on a very busy day for you guys. Drove in the Flagstaff. You're heading up Belize Ferry tomorrow. I hope you have an incredible journey. Keep your cameras with you. If you see something like this again, get those photographs and have an incredible journey.
Thank you so much, Tom, and for everything you do for the rivers.
Well, we're all in this together.
Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, that'll conclude today's V-Wave podcast. I hope you enjoyed our journey here. Good night.